Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook, / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter, at The Kick-Ass Life, and, of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joe Vitale, author of Attract Money Now. You're listening to The Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood.
Life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, it's David here, and welcome to the show, and I'm here in Phoenix, Arizona, having just finished an event of 2,000 people, and I'm always just so filled with gratitude, because I always find, whether I'm on stage or off stage, when I go to events where people, you know, are focused on personal development, on their own journey, on expansion, on discovering and building new strengths, on building their own businesses and creating more wealth, it's just remarkable. It's remarkable because I see so many people who are at different stages in their journey. And I think everyone's sort of traveling in the same direction. We all want the same things. I think we all want to live a life of purpose and passion. We want to know that our life made a difference. And I think that everyone would love to have some form of financial freedom where they can choose to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, with whom they want to do it, as often as they want to do it. And I think that, yeah, there's a part of all of us that wants that, but very few people really... seldom do people really find a vehicle that can allow that to happen. And of course, we're here right now at this event where people really have that vehicle. And I'm so excited to be a part of that and to watch so many people realizing their dream. At one point, we had 200 people that were making either six figures, multiple six figures, or seven-figure incomes. And I think at one point there were 14 people on the stage that had were making over $1 million a year. And that really is gratifying for me to know that the work we do really has and pays dividends. And you know, once people realize those fundamentals about, you know, creating wealth. And when I was at the event, of course, my guest was here as well. And he's a remarkable character, remarkable guy, great heart. And we just got to pop into a back room. In fact, you know, I had to pre-record the show, so I know exactly what's coming. So I can tell you in advance, you know, people were knocking on the door, but we sort of had to try and find a little space. And this guy's, you know, interesting because he's created his own financial wealth, and he has great relationships. He has tremendous health. He's a second or third degree black belt in karate. He's a formulator. He's an author, 10 books. You think the guy doesn't sleep and doesn't eat, but he does. And he has just a great life. And he's really, you know, somebody who's come over to this country with nothing, arrived here with a few hundred dollars in his pocket, and being able to sort of create the life of his dreams. And I know it's possible for everyone. And I know that there's only a few secret formulas or secret steps that each of us can take. And really, they're not so secret because we talk about them all the time. And I think it's just really whether we can embrace them and whether we can start to believe that we can do them and achieve them. And so, you know, it's so wonderful to have him on the show. And, you know, to be honest with you, I thought we were going to be talking about nutrition and the products that he's developed. And, you know, in the end, of course, the conversation goes where a conversation should. And it really sort of came down to his faith and his action. And he takes massive action, has tremendous faith, spends a lot of time in prayer. And I think that truly there are so many gems in this show that really, if you listen carefully, maybe you have to listen twice, and you find that one or two things that you can do that will allow you to step into the greatest life you can lead, or your kick-ass life, That's awesome. And before I bring him on, I do want to say, you know, I'm deeply serious about our Kick-Ass Life Adventure Club. And we've chosen to go to Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands. And I've seen some of you have gone on Facebook and you've told me that you're ready and you'd like to come. And I am working right now to set this program up. But if you want to come and travel with me and, you know, and really sort of spend time, imagine spending, you know, 10 or 15 days, well, not 15, but probably 14 days together, traveling in, around the world and crossing things off your bucket list. I really want you to sort of put that as your a priority. Put that on your bucket list, you know, to come and have a kick-ass life adventure with us. And I'd like to see that if you're serious, that yeah, I get an email from you or a text from you or I get a Facebook message from you that you're ready. And again, don't worry about the money. Don't worry about the time yet. Just say yes, and you'll figure out the money and time once we know what it is. But I really want to invite you to join us. And before we bring our guest on the show, I want to let you know that, you know, the best of the Kick-Ass Life is officially being launched. I've talked about it, and we've been sort of going backwards and forwards on it. But we have, it's ready. Yeah, you just have to go into the website, thekickasslife.com. You can download it immediately. And it's really my look back over some of the great shows and bringing out the gems and nuggets of some of our great guests. And it may take you a few minutes to do, but, you know, do me a favor. You know, take those few minutes, listen to today's show, and then just take a few minutes and download that for yourself. Because it really will remind you of some of the great parts. Because with 85 shows now, it's going to be hard for you to remember those great gems. And so what I want to do with the best of the Kick-Ass Life is to be able to give those to you on a consistent basis. So anyway, I want to thank you again for listening in. And I want to want you to sit back and really enjoy the conversation, sitting face to face with a good friend of mine, the wonderful double doctor, a doctor in two disciplines who arrived here with nothing and has just done so much, Dr. Tony O'Donnell. So I always start the show with this, how excited I am. And I'm incredibly excited because here I am sitting opposite one of the kindest and nicest people I've ever met. And, you know, it's easy to say that. But, you know, if when I watch this guy walk around and it can meet 100 people in a day, he's going to remember your name, the conversation you had. And it's the light or the brightness that comes off of him. And so, you know, it's a real honor to have him on the show. So first of all, Tony, welcome.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here. Appreciate your nice comments.
Well, here we are in sunny Phoenix, Arizona.
There's no escape. You can't say anything bad about me because you can't get out that door.
Right. We're in a locked room to try and keep everybody out.
But, that's right.
But Tony, you know, part of the reason I wanted to have you on the show, and as we were chatting last night over, I had a glass in my hand. I know you don't drink, but the sort of, you have 10 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know that I struggled to write my first book. How did you start writing books? And each one of them is so significant and so needed. And you tell me you actually sit down and you physically write the book. You don't type it into a computer. You actually, the old style, you get a pen, blank piece of paper, you start writing.
I am from Ireland, after all. We do things a little differently, slowly, albeit. I used to write for a rock and roll newspaper in Galway, Ireland, on the West Coast, which is a beautiful city if you ever want to go there. And I loved rock and roll music. I was a rock and roll DJ. I played in the nightclubs. I was on the radio in Ireland. And so when I came to America, I thought, I need to write a book, but I didn't know how. And that's one of the problems that most people are faced with. They don't know how.
But what made you, I want to get back to that. So I need to write a book. Why at that moment did you realize
Whitman said everybody should write a book.
So
I guess I had too much kiss the Blarney Stone. So I wanted to write a book on health because I became a naturopathic doctor. I studied natural medicine back in Ireland. And I wanted to write a book to educate people on the benefits of pure health and what good health is all about, and particularly as it relates to green foods and red superfoods, which I've been working on for the last 20 years or so. So when I wrote the first book, my mentor told me, you should have a book. And I said, well, how do I start? He says, well, you just sit down, get a pen and a piece of paper and start writing your book. And in fact, it was my Irish colleague and friend, Gabriel Byrne, the Irish actor, who inspired me to write my first book. He wrote a book for his children called Pictures in My Head. And he said, I wrote that book, he said, as a legacy for his children. So I went home after seeing him speak at a store in Santa Monica, California, and I said, well, I can do this too. So I just whipped out some paper and started writing. And lo and behold, I had 25 pages written the first night. And I just started writing and writing. Then I got a friend to type it up. The first time I typed it up myself, and then my computer froze and I lost the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that was a bad start. So I said, I'm not doing that again. So now I just write really longhand. 10, 15, 20 pages at a time, and it's not hard to get to 300 pages.
But the paradox of your, even the setup of that, you know, rock and roll DJ health.
Yes.
Irish.
A sober rock and roll DJ.
You don't drink, and you were telling me about that, you know, you sort of.
I grew up with a bunch of drunks. There was enough. By the way, I was just watching the news this morning, and I think Wisconsin was the third most drunkenest city in America, Norfolk, Virginia, and then, of course, Boston. Must be all the Irish. Boston was number one, and Tucson used to be on the list in Arizona as number 10, but it's not on the list anymore, so they don't drink as much there.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, coming from Ireland, I come from England, you know, we have a drink, right. They call it a pub culture, right? I
mean, yes.
People go out to socialize.
Fish and chips and a pint of beer.
A pint of beer. But getting back to sort of this health thing, what happened to you? I mean, you're a naturopathic doctor, you're a clinical psychologist, so you're a doctor in two modalities. When you're going from this DJ kind of booth where, you know, you're a non-drinking DJ in pubs in Ireland and in clubs in Ireland, how did you get interested in this health path and how did you start writing books?
Great question. I lost my father when I was 21 and it really bothered me, the head of the household. I'm from a family of 11, six brothers and sisters. And when I lost my dad, I became very aware and very scared because I wasn't eating right and most people don't eat correctly. Bacon, eggs, sausages, and fried bread. I was a sickly child. I was at the doctor, David, a lot. And I was concerned about that, and I didn't like it. And I didn't like going to the dentist either. And so a friend of mine from England told me about studying herbs and nutrition and growing your own herbs. And I thought, wow, that's fascinating. So I went to England, started studying natural herbs in Brighton, England. And I became fascinated with plants, their therapeutic benefits, their dosages, the health benefits, the dangers of certain herbs, when to take them, how to take them, how not to mix alcohol with them, how not to take medication with certain herbs, and so on and so forth. So this is what led me on this path. I think when my father died, it really changed my life significantly because he was such a great man. My mother was such a great lady. She just passed away recently, as you know. And so that's what led me on this journey. I wanted to really make a difference in the lives of our fellow man and woman. Then I met Mother Teresa, and she changed my whole life. She said that the healing of the sick is the greatest calling one can have in one's life. And this is why I do what I do. And this is why I was led on this journey. And I think we're all led on a journey to fulfill whatever wishes that you want for your life. And my wish was to learn these herbs, study them, help people who were sick, help people who had difficulty with diabetes, cancer, weight loss, and so on and so forth. And this is where I get my joy. And so I turned my vacation into my vocation, if you will. And this is why I do what I do, and I travel, and I lecture, and I go around the country, and this is why I write the books. I don't write the books for profit. I write the books to educate and to help people become more aware and more mindful. This is why I do what I do.
But, you know, like when I introduced you and I talked about that, when I watch you, this bright light, I mean, you know, it's easy for people to say the words you say, but you truly have a light around you that, you know, it's always present. You're always, you know, you're always in your body when you're talking to someone, which is a beautiful trait. You talk about Mother Teresa. Can you take me back there for a moment? I mean, how did you meet her? Where did you meet her? What happened there?
She's from Skopje, originally in Europe, and she had studied in Ireland at the convent, and I had a chance, an opportunity to meet her. And she had always said that, you know, the healing of the sick is the greatest calling one can have in one's life, and also had an opportunity to meet a lady who worked with Padre Pio from San Giovanni Rotondo in Italy, and he had bleeding wounds in his hands and his sides and his feet, which is remarkable. He had Our Lord's bleeding wounds. And I got to meet this lady. My mother dragged me off to this big theater. There was 2,000 people, and I didn't know where I was going. She says, you got to meet this really amazing lady that worked with this amazing man who's now canonized by the Vatican. And so I got to touch these mitts that he wore around his hands, which is also part of my healing. And this is one of the reasons why I was led into this holistic field of helping people find a new way of living free of pain and suffering. I've seen a lot of sickness, David, in my life. You've seen a lot of sickness. Losing my father, my mother, my fiance to cancer. She weighed 87 pounds. I knew that that God wanted something different for me, and I knew that there was a calling on my life, and this is why I do what I do with my hands when I do hands-on healing. And many people profess that they're great healers. I don't profess that. So the laying of hands on people sometimes is also remarkable at helping people heal, helping people, like I mentioned just momentarily, become more aware, more mindful, more in tune with their own spirit. And this is why if you say you see a light around me, you're the second person that told me that since yesterday, and a lot of people have told me that. That just comes from the Holy Spirit. That just comes from prayer. I spend a lot of deep, precious time in prayer. And since my mom passed, I do a lot more prayer. I believe that prayer is really powerful. And we now know from science that prayer can actually change the brain, change your whole biological terrain, change your whole physiology, biologically, chemically, and psychologically. And so I do that as a way of giving thanks for the gifts that I have in my own life, because I grew up very poor. You probably the same background, grew up in England. I grew up in Ireland, family of 11, holes in my shoes, but a very strong faith by my great parents. My mother and my father taught us to say the rosary every night, 9 o'clock, down on your knees, don't get a girl pregnant, be home at 9 o'clock, be home at 9 o'clock, say the rosary and try to do good. And I thought, wow, I resisted a lot of that initially when I was growing up, but the values that our parents, particularly in Ireland, very Catholic country, taught me have now helped me become a better human being. And that's what we all strive to be, right? As a good human being, full of joy, full of love, full of compassion, and with a high degree of integrity, and helping people in the process. And that's what my job is to try and better everybody's life every single day so that my life becomes better in the process.
There's so many points you made there which I want to sort of dwell on a little bit more, because, you know, the show's called The Kick-Ass Life, and for me, I wanted to find a signature that really talked about my philosophies. And, you know, to lead a kick-ass life, when we talk about this part of in you know, the integrity, the kindness, the presence, the just like you say, in deep prayer, where you have a deep connection to your faith. Now, a lot of people today, you see them sort of moving away, especially in the Catholic Church. It's fascinating. I was just reading an article about how many people are moving away from the Catholic Church into more of a spirituality, but still, that when you talk about that deep prayer and the importance of it with the brain, just sort of touch a little bit more on that. If somebody listening in, I mean, we're in 151 countries.
Congratulations.
Talk about, you know, the idea of, if it's not prayer, what's another way to do the same thing? Is it meditation? Is it, because you know all of these things right now, right?
I mean, Well, I don't know. Yeah, I've studied this. In fact, I want to go to India and study with some of the great yogis, some of the great masters. I have a lot of colleagues in LA who are great yogis and great masters and meditative specialists. I just find there's a tremendous amount of peace, and we all need peace. Heaven knows, David, the world is in turmoil. We saw what happened in Sandy Hook in Connecticut recently. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit later on the show. I'm doing CNN this weekend. I'm going to be talking about why we do the things we do, why we create chaos and drama and so much pain and suffering. And there comes a time in one's life where you have to decide what it is that you want for your life, and what is your purpose, and what is your calling. And you don't want to be in conflict every single day. Conflict is not good. We have enough of that around the world. And different, you pick any country in the world and there's conflict and strife. And I watched in the news this morning, we're only a couple of days into the new year, and already there's 5 murders in Chicago. It's pretty sad that we do those things. They collected 10,000 guns from the street, 9 times more guns in Chicago than there are in New York City. So we really have a problem. We have to take a look at ourselves and what we're doing and what we're manifesting, and why we have so much conflict, why we have so much anger, why we have lack of forgiveness, and why we have so much resentment, defiance, and why we explode and take things out on other people, particularly as it relates to firearms. So when you pray, it gives you an opportunity, as I just read recently, to be in the moment with your maker or your creator. And you mentioned earlier about people moving away from the church, and that's sad, and that has happened. There's only one person joined the seminary in Ireland in the last year or so, which is very, very sad, simply because of all the abuse by the Catholic Church, which I think is just unforgivable. It's really, really sad. I saw a lot of that as a child growing up, but many of my colleagues were in denial about it. And I saw a lot of impropriety amongst the Catholic faith, which was sad. It never turned me away. It disgusted me and it made me upset, but I never turned away from my faith. And unfortunately, it became so big, not only in this country and in Boston and also in Los Angeles with some of the churches, but also in my own country, which is very small, 3 million people or so. Most of them now have immigrated, of course, not all, but 4%, 40,000 or so have immigrated to Australia because there's a huge amount of growth there. So when it comes to finding peace, you got to be still. You got to know that you are a worthwhile human being. Most people, David, have very low levels of self-esteem. 85% of people don't like themselves. They really don't. This is why we have so much plastic surgery. People are altering themselves in different ways, shapes, and forms. We want to change psychologically. We want to change physically. We want to change biologically. We want to do things. We want to look like celebrities. And inside, we still don't feel any different, even though we do the surgery. So prayer is a magnificent thing that works personally for me. I know that in different parts of the world, in Tibet and in different cultures, meditation is remarkable. So what I try to do in my own home, I create a sacred space for me where I pray, where I give thanks for the gifts that our Creator has provided for us. You have to find who your mentor is. You have to find who your spiritual leader is, whether it's the Catholic Church or whether it's the Dalai Lama. It doesn't matter. As long as this peace, my girlfriend...
It's the same energy.
It's the same energy. My girlfriend is a practicing Buddhist. She grew up Catholic in Omaha, Nebraska, but she's been a practicing Buddhist for 20 plus years. And it's the law of cause and effect that she works on because, you know, you got to find the attractions and the things that you want to attract into your life.
So if we take this back to the light that I feel around you all the time I see you, there's a correlation between this connection to self that you have in your prayer.
Absolutely.
Which other people can find in their meditation.
Right.
But you said another part, and I hear it every single time you're on stage, every time I've seen you speak, you start with gratitudes come out of your mouth. Like it's an automatic, and you said that in prayer, mm-hmm. there's a level of gratitude. How significant is gratitude in this whole self-love process, in this whole, you know, discovering and living your own life, let's say?
Well, there's a restaurant in L.A. called Cafe Gratitude, and there's a couple in San Francisco and several restaurants in L.A. that bear the theme gratitude. We live in the United States of America, the richest, most abundant society in all of human history, yet as Henry David Thoreau says, we lead lives of quiet desperation. There's many people who are listening to the podcast and they're suffering. They're wondering, will my life change? Will things get better? You know that, David. When you first came to this country, you know, you traveled around the world and you saw the struggles and trials and tribulations. So we have to be thankful because we live in the United States of America, because people are not plotting and scheming to get to Poland or Mexico. Though great countries, people are coming to the United States. So we have to be thankful. We have to be mindful and prayerful. And we have to be... blessed to feel that we live in this great country, which we call the United States of America, because we have so much here, we have so much abundance. Yet when you look at other parts of the world, in Africa, in Ghana and Gabon, where 30,000 people die every day from lack of food, lack of water, we're the most overfed, undernourished, over-medicated nation in the world. So because gratitude is so crucial and so powerful, most of us are not aware. And one of the reasons why is because we live such a busy lifestyle. We are on the go all day long. We barely say hello to our children. We don't tell our kids that we love them. We don't tell our wives that we love them. We don't tell our significant others that we love them. We don't show gratitude for anything on a daily basis. And we should be doing that moment to moment to moment. I live a joyous life right now in Los Angeles. When I look at my life compared to 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't have much. I had no car. I had no phone. I had no bed. I had no job. I was illegal. I didn't even have immigration papers. And that was able to be turned around due to my own drive and determination and my compelling why, and thankful for the gifts that I had, because I knew that I could make it in this great country. And that's why I'm so grateful for the opportunities. The opportunity to spend this moment with you right here, right now, is a blessing to help maybe inspire somebody who's listening to this the podcast, that they could go out and really manifest and make things different in their life. That's probably not happening right now, because I want to give people hope. And this is why we have to be grateful. We have to be grateful for our food. We have to be grateful that we're alive. We have to be grateful for our health. We have to be very grateful for our parents. I had the opportunity to go to grad school, as you know, David, just got done last year. And I met some people who I was really disappointed in grad school, who wanted to be clinical psychologists. And many of them were not grateful for their parents. They didn't like their parents, yet their parents were paying for their education. I used to look at them in disgust because I love my parents. I love them unconditionally, and I pray for them every night and every day and every moment that I get. So we have to be thankful for every opportunity that we get to spend on this earth. And as they say in Ireland, any moment above ground is a good day.
I want to jump in a little bit on the, you talked about this, we talk about the United States, we're sitting in the United States right now, so it's a poignant subject. Here we are with a country that has so much, yet people are so empty in so many ways. You know, you talk about self-love being really 85-90% of people really struggle in that arena, and I know most of the students I've ever trained really, really struggle in the arena of self-love.
Right.
Yeah, when we go, you travel around the world. You've been to some of the remote tribes in your quest for as a naturopathic doctor. You know, you've really gone out there into the jungles and met different
people. Yeah, the Hunzas, the Vilcabamba Indians, the Azerbaijanis, the Titicacas. These are the happiest people in the world.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. You know, you see people with so little who have so much inside.
And my mother was like that, David. She prayed all the time, and I couldn't understand. We would say, Mom, do you have to pray all the time? But she was the quietest, most still, most mindful human being, most blessed human being you could ever meet, and she definitely had the Holy Spirit in her life every single day, and it taught me a valuable lesson. And when Mom passed 2 years ago, and you were very kind, David, I was with you up in Canada just prior to her passing, up in Toronto. We did the lecture together at the Westin. And I can't thank the people of Toronto for their love and joy and support, because I had a huge room of 200 or 300 people just being there supporting me. My point is, you can be happy anywhere you wish to be, and you don't have to have all the material trappings of success. If you look at Hollywood, for example, I live in that area, even though I live out in the wine country in Malibu. I see so many people with so much, the big houses, the big cars, lots of money, but they're spiritually bankrupt. My mother was spiritually full of life, full of energy, and I thought, wow, this is an interesting, this is a lady that was really calm, very quiet, very powerful, was loved by thousands and thousands of people at her funeral, ministers, people in government, people in the police force, people in the military came to our home because she impacted so many people, and she would do hands-on prayer with people. So I really believe in the power of prayer. We need prayer more so than ever before, David. Whatever prayer means to you, or even meditation or stillness, but most importantly, peace. We just don't have the peace in our heart. And this is why we're so conflicted. This is why we have murders. This is why we have shootings. This is why we have so much mayhem and chaos and drama in our life and throughout our communities, simply because people don't have prayer, and prayer is gone from the home, which is really sad.
So if we look at other strategies, if prayer, if someone on the show is listening right now and they're saying, you know, I'm aware that I, in listening to you, that I don't have that quiet time, I don't create that peace, that, because there's so many elements, so many levels of that. You talked about in your home having a special place where you go, where you can find that. And I think it's really, a lot of my friends that have the brightest light, they all have that in common. They have a space in their home that is kind of sacred, where they go and spend time. Sometimes they just go and read there. It doesn't mean that.
Exactly.
But for them, it's a place of sanctuary where they can find, in amongst the noise and the chaos.
I do that in the afternoon when my office phones is ringing like crazy, and there's crises, and I feel that my resistance is getting high, or it's a difficult phone call, because we're all a work in progress. I disappear to my room, my sanctuary, and I know that it's safe. And sometimes I'll put on very, very spiritual music, or I'll light a candle. And I have a lot of my mom's memorabilia, spiritual memorabilia, or pictures and different saints and stuff, St. Anthony, St. Martin, things like that from home. And I'll just sit there and I'll just pray and I'll just ask for guidance and just ask for an opportunity to have this day be the brightest, most abundant day that I could possibly live in the context of love and joy. And I can do the same for other people. But I know for me, In my darkest hour, David, and I came here to this country with $500 and struggling, no immigration paper. It's very scary to do that. Scary for a guy who's a big, tall, strong guy, like you and I are both big, tall guys. It was scary for me. I know how much fear there is in people's lives. The thing that got me through all of that was prayer and my compelling why, which is to take care of my parents, kept my eye on the ball, kept my intentions clear. But the thing that kept me sacred and safe was my time of prayer more than anything else. And when you have that, you have peace. And outside of that, there's always drama. There's always chaos. We're going 100 miles an hour. We don't take the time to sit and be still or to simply breathe like you and I are doing right now, just talking man to
man. That's an interesting point. The art of conversation, which I have to teach people. I find it crazy that I go around the world, and one of the things I taught the art of connection,
right, where
people
which is awesome.
Sit and have a conversation, which is, it's an art form. When I watch my kids even today, they'll be standing, you know, three seats from each other, texting each other, having a conversation in sort of half language. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong, but the art of conversation certainly is waning in our Western cultures. But when we look at these tribes or these places that you talk about with the happiest people in the world, one of the defining points of happiness is connection, is that they sit together in circles and chat. And you look in Japan, you look in any of the cultures where they've got the happiest and longest living people, this point of connection is a really big point as well, right?
Going through grad school, taking my doctorate in clinical psychology, I just completed last December. It was a six-year course done in 3 years. And out of all of the stuff that I've studied and I continue to read based on some of the research from Freud and Erickson and the different psychotherapists and analysts, the main thing, David, just to build on what you just said, is we have to have connection. If we don't have connection or communication with our fellow man and fellow woman, with our children, then we suffer from what's called self-annihilation, a lack of self, a lack of self-love. And it's the people who come together, who connect, who communicate, who love, who build their self-esteem, have a powerful, compelling relationship with their parents or with their significant others and with their children. Those children, David, grow up to become very, very successful. We have found that children who do not connect suffer from self-annihilation. They don't know where they're at. They have no direction. They have no communication. They have no connection, are not able to cope. These are the kids that you see doing the shootings in the street. These are the kids that you see doing the shootings in the school system, simply because of a lack of connection, a lack of communication, a lack of awareness, a lack of self-love. So this is why we need to get back to the basics of what life was all about, which is coming together. We cannot survive. Human beings cannot survive. Animals can't survive. Babies that are born cannot survive. There was one story, as you probably know, it was called the hug around the world, the hugging the little child that was in the hospital, had a bad heart. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that story?
No, I don't remember the story, no.
There was a story about a nurse in the hospital. I think it was in Canada, maybe the United States. And it was called the hug. And the little child had a bad heart. And the nurse broke with normal protocol and took another child in the hospital in the incubator and put that child next to the other little child with the weak heart. And the baby with the good heart put its little arm on top of the other little baby's heart, and miraculously, the heart of the baby that was weak started to heal. Quite remarkable, to say the least. What if she didn't do that? That little child was starving. In fact, in Russia, they did some powerful studies where they took babies away from their mothers and unfortunately had to stop the study because within a couple of weeks, the children were dying. They had to stop that. It was a landmark study that was done. So we have an inherent need. You and I, can you imagine if you never were touched, which happens to a lot of children? Can you imagine if someone didn't tell you they love you? We all need this reinforcement. We all need this connection. We all need the touch, the love of a mother's touch. The mother's breast milk is the first line of defense in the fight against degenerative disease and builds your whole immune system when a child is born. Imagine that doesn't happen. These are the children that become isolationists. These are the children that become angry, as in the case of this child that went crazy and shot all those people in Sandy Hook in Connecticut. This was a child that was separated from mother and father. This was a child that was taking medication. This was a child that was an isolationist. This was a child that was angry. This was a child that had low levels of self-esteem. This was a child that had no communication. This was a child that lacked self-love. This was a child that was angry. This was a child that yearned, David, yearned for connection, yearned for self-love, yearned for the love of his parents, was angry at their parents, parents had separated, but didn't have that. And as a result, you know what happened next.
It's crazy. As you were saying that, I was thinking about how often I've said on stage, you know, Adolf Hitler and what he did during the war, and, you know, 6 million people exterminated.
Yeah.
You know, I think, well, what would have happened if he'd grown up and maybe been to one of our programs or been in a connection or in a community like this where there is so much beauty and so much connection? It would have been almost impossible for him to have done those things, because that external violence is really a reflection of that internal hatred or that internal...
You're right. Right? And going through grad school, I did a whole paper on Hitler and stuff I learned about him that I didn't know. He had a remarkable relationship with his mother. he had a volatile relationship with his father. His father used to beat him and used to hide in the closet and would kick him and punch him, and he suffered from all sorts of seizures and would defecate and have tremendous psychological, physiological problems. He carried a picture of his mother with him at all times, and apparently at his death he had a picture of his mother. His father didn't like him because he felt he was a failure. And because he felt he was a failure, he couldn't get into art school. Hitler always wanted to get into art school. Yeah. And he couldn't even get into art school, so his father beat him up because he felt he was a nobody. So while I don't want to talk too much about him because it's a very sensitive subject, because he offended and hurt and damaged and maimed and caused so much pain for so many people. He had so much rage against the Jewish population, so much rage in his heart. He could have taken it out on anybody, because he grew up an Austrian Jew himself. So he was killing technically his own people. He disliked Jewish people because he just disliked people. It could have been Irish, it could have been Polish people, it could have been anybody.
But even if we're talking about the same energy, I mean, we're talking about this guy in Connecticut and this guy called Hitler, who obviously took it to another level.
Right.
Same, but it's the same reasons.
Exactly the same reason.
The same reason.
And if he would have had your course, David, the art of connection, the art of communication, if you would have had
sense of belonging
and being worthwhile. He had helplessness and hopelessness together. He had poor self-esteem. He had disentanglement. He had self-annihilation because he didn't feel good, because his father didn't give him the love that he deserved and needed. His mother, though, did. He went off and created a monster. That's what they created. So his way of getting back and being noticed, David, was to start speaking, building Germany into a new Germany, a false promise telling them, we'll have a better country if you follow me. And of course, he manipulated the press, he manipulated the radio, he started to speak, he was sponsored by a lot of these manufacturing and promised them a new Germany, and as a result, it was total chaos and damnation.
So when we looked at a couple of these lessons, and I want to talk a little bit before the end of the show on your work around food, because it's the same thing again, the connection to food. I mean, the way that your philosophies around food, and I know I use your products every single day, and in fact, 10 minutes before I came here, I was putting your products in my shake.
That's why you look so good.
Yeah, and you know, I use greens and reds every single day. But you know, that if we look at it, like, again, the Kick-Ass Life show, we know that there's people listening around the world. The reason they put this on, there's a part of them, or there's a part of this show that calls to them. There's a message they're looking for somehow. And I look at this message from you right now saying, hey, you know, that quiet place of deep connection,
right?
That deep sense of connection to faith or spirituality or something.
Yeah, whatever
something
that is big, to you.
Whatever that is to you,
right.
That sense of deep gratitude, right? This sense of self-love and connection. Connection with, you know, with the community.
No matter what your circumstances are, because many people grew up. I grew up in Northern Ireland, you know, guns, bullets, petrol bombs in wine bottles, and many of my friends were injured and killed. That's the environment I grew up in, and I didn't like it, David. I couldn't.
You were taught. I mean, I remember because I mean, the Irish conflict was very much a part of my life. My father was in the army.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that you were the hatred that was induced in the kids, Protestants against Catholics. I mean, that was our whole country mindset, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And my neighbors were all Protestants. They were the greatest people in the world. And it was a lot of the British Army stirring up, unfortunately, some trouble between the two of them. And now it's peaceful. People get along. The members of the former IRA and Sinn Féin, different parts
politics,
of, they're all in politics now.
Right.
And they finally woke up to the possibility that, wow, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm in my late 50s now. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fight and shoot.
But was it crazy to think that Ireland was, I mean, how that was over a 100-year conflict, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was going on. It's been going on for over 100-plus years.
And I remember as a young boy, the kneecapping, people would drill through people's knees.
Tarred and feathered.
I mean, this is something that was happening when I was a young boy. This wasn't like 100 years ago.
And I used to be so scared because the IRA would come out into the south of Ireland and say, you have to stop all work today. If you don't, you know what's going to happen, to pay respects to the people that were killed in Northern Ireland, for example. That's why U2, Bono wrote the song, you know, Sunday Bloody Sunday, you right. know, when those 13 people were killed, trying to give a message to people to say there's got to be a better way. And this is why presidents and the president of the United States and presidents of different countries got to take a new approach. I mean, you look at Syria, you look at Egypt, you look at the Far East, you look at different parts of the world. There's so much conflict, so much strife, so much, it's an ego power struggle. What if they all just went back and said, you know what, I want the best for my people. You know what I'm saying, David? I want people.
Well, if we take it down even one step lower, what about if everyone on the show, everyone listening right now, wants the best for everyone around them? I mean, that's how it starts.
They should.
We could affect our own world just by the lack of judgment.
Your community, your family. Start with your own family.
Falling in love with the people you dislike, you know, looking for the best in our neighbors, you know, knocking on doors. And
don't be flogging your children, you know, so they stay. I met a young boy I interviewed for my television show, The Solution, with Dr. Tony in Los Angeles, and his parents had beat him up. He suffered from grand mal seizures. At 4 years old, he couldn't even defend himself. I have tears just thinking about it. And he hid in the closet.
Right.
From all the beatings. Now he's training for the Olympics,
right.
you know, which is quite remarkable. He ended up in the hospital and they got him help and took him away from his parents who were beating him up. I have a friend in San Diego, the same thing happened to her. She's a therapist now, and she suffered from the same abuse by her parents right. because her parents were so angry they took it out on the child.
Sure.
And she ended up in the hospital as a result of that, suffering from grand mal seizures. We have to stop the cycle of abuse, not only in our own lives, but also in our community, by being a force for good.
So again, and this sense of purpose that you had, I mean, obviously when you lost your fiance, I know you're, I mean, we haven't even mentioned I mentioned your products, but you're a formulator as well as an author. You know, again, it's only been a few years, you arrived here with nothing. A lot of people on the show right now, I mean, people want, there's a yearning for something more. And quite often, you know, we talk about this whole show about this self-discovery, but if we talk about the external success as well, if we sort of breach out from internal and we go external, you've been able to create a tremendous financial success for yourself. And I believe that you practice the law of Goya. Do you know what the law of Goya is?
Sure do.
Get off your ass.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, you really, I mean, you know, 10 books in print right now. You're working
Two in Spanish.
Two in Spanish, but your new book, The Miracle Pain Secret, mm-hmm. I mean, that's your latest book.
Right.
I know you're working on one, I mean, beyond that.
How to Think Like a Millionaire, Act Like One, and Become One.
Yeah, and so this whole, I mean, becoming a doctor in psychology during this, I mean, that's a six-year program you condense into 3 years.
Full-time.
Full-time, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people have excuses of why they don't get the things they want. I mean, and you're a representation of someone who lives on purpose, who has deep spiritual faith, who walks their path, who lights up a room, and who's able to create this financial success as well. So talk to me a little bit about this financial success you've enjoyed. What's some of the things you've learned about turning this good heart into a financial powerhouse, which you've done?
Right. Good questions, David. You and I grew up back home. You're from the UK. I'm from Ireland. I grew up very poor. I had holes in my shoes, David. I would take pieces of cardboard and put them in my wellies and my shoes just to keep the rain out. And I wasn't embarrassed about it because everybody else was doing the same thing. But I was frustrated because I wanted to help my parents and I had a compelling why. And I was sick and tired of not having any money. And that's why I knew there was something better for me. I didn't have the tools. I had the drive. I had the determination. I had some of the street smarts, but I didn't have the tools until I came to America. And when I came to America, I went to the seminars, the Jack Canfields of the world, the Tony Robbins of the world, the Les Browns of the world, Dennis Waitley's of the world, the Deepak Chopra's of the world, helping me understand how not only cycle the mind makes some of the body sick, but how cycle the mind and some of the body can also manifest so much greatness. So I started taking all the courses. I'm really into personal development. If you come to my home, one big wall, like this big wall right here, is just covered in personal development. Everybody that comes in and said, no wonder why you're successful. This is all you do is listen, not all I do, but you listen to the DVDs and the CDs and you read the books. And I said, yes, because—
Well, yeah, but you do one thing else. You put it into action.
That's the key. Yeah, you got to take action.
Yeah.
That's because I went to a Tony Robbins seminar one time with my last traveler's check. May I give those Thomas Cook traveler's checks?
I remember those.
And I said, this better work. I'm going back to Ireland to get to work on the farm.
Yeah.
And he had asked, how many of you in the audience have your goals written down? I was hiding behind the person next to me. And I thought I was really embarrassed. I didn't have my goals written down because, you know, we talk about our goals, but we don't write them down. And then, like you said, David, we don't take action. So I went to the beach in Santa Monica, down in Venice Beach, sat down in the sand, got a couple of yellow pages, notepad, and wrote down all these goals, laughed at these goals. And then I turned my car into, Mark Victor Hansen, my great friend, told me to turn my car into a university on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to listen to those CDs over and over and over, started to live them, manifest them, got them into every fiber of my being. And all of a sudden, things started to happen for me. Got speaking engagements, got radio, got an infomercial. You know, things started to build for me beyond my wildest imagination. Then I was driving down Santa Monica Boulevard, driving my brand new Mercedes after just putting $50,000 or $60,000 in the bank. I said, is this really possible? Did I actually do this? Then I said to myself, am I really deserving of this? And then I thought, well, why not? Why not? But I don't want the money for me. I want the money so that I can prosper other people and help other people prosper in the process. And so money comes to those who think and act and do. You got to do that. It's very important.
Right.
Really, really important. Because most people have a fear. And fear stands for, as you know, false expectations that appear to be real. So you got to take action. You got to get around the right people. You got to have your mastermind group. You got to have a support group. You got to get out there and exercise. You got to exercise your mind and your body. You got to take massive action. You got to listen to the tapes. You got to attend the seminars. And you got to get out of bed in the morning. And you got to be thankful for the gifts that your Creator has provided for you. And you go after your dream with every fiber of your being. And I did that. That's why I write the books, David. I don't write them because...
Yeah, you shared that with me before. I mean, I was just at your booth there. And there's like books. I mean, piles and piles of books. There's CDs. Yeah. And I mean, it's remarkable. It's like, it's a whole library that you've written.
And I have to thank my mentors for that. Because my mentor, Jack Canfield, who I love. And you know, Jack's a colleague.
He was on the show here just a month
Jack's
ago,
a brother and, yeah. and brother in spirit with all of us. Jack told me to develop my... mind. I was doing the lectures, I was doing the seminars, I was doing the radio, I was doing the television. I didn't have a book, and he showed me how to write my first book. And once I started writing my first book, a second one, a third one, a fourth one, I tried to do one a year. That's what I've been doing for the last couple of years, is writing the books so that I can become a force for good, so that I can help somebody else. I just gave someone my DVD set, A Breaking the Poverty Cycle, 6 DVDs to listen to and 6 CDs. He said it's changed their whole life in 14, 15 days. Is that possible? Yeah, I know it's possible for me. I know it's possible for you too. And this is why I do what I do, because if you don't have a good sense of self, we talked about that, David, earlier. If we don't love ourselves unconditionally, if our self-esteem is not good, you only rise to where your self-esteem allows you to be. And if you don't feel worthy, you know, scripture says, Lord, I'm not worthy to receive you, but only say the word and I shall be healed. And most people don't believe that, and that's why they don't get the things that they should have, that they're entitled to, because we live in America and we have abundance, and we should go after it with every fiber of our being. And thank goodness for our mentors, and thank goodness for the other people who speak, the Les Browns of the world, as I mentioned, the late Zig Ziglar, who inspired me beyond my wildest imagination.
I saw Zig, I was at an event, and I was backstage, and I mean, he looked like, I mean, this was only a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, maybe, no, yeah, maybe 2 years ago. And I mean, and he was on stage with his daughter, and his daughter's job was to make sure he didn't fall off the stage.
Right.
But he was still giving at the highest level.
Right. And at 80 years old.
At 80 years of age, you know, and he would, because he'd already had a stroke, and so he was like, but he'd walk close to the end, and she would just walk, she'd walk close to him, and here I'm thinking, wow, I mean, to be completely in his body, and then we were in an arena. There was 45,000 people in this arena. It wasn't a small arena, right? And so it was like a guy doing his thing, and this giving.
Passion.
Yeah. And I think about Zig Ziglar in my own journey. When I exactly the same thing, you know, I came in from England, and when I hear your story, and I say, well, what was my change? My change was this whole idea about working on my thinking.
Right.
I had stinking thinking.
Thinking. Yeah.
And so Tony, you know, we're almost at the top of the show. We've got about 6 minutes left. And I want to sort of, what is it when you talk about a kick-ass life for you, if you had to describe it, and how would you describe a kick-ass life? What is a kick-ass life?
Well, for me personally, is getting up in the morning, doing my prayers, getting out, exercising, running my steps. I run 600 steps in the morning just to get my body fired up, get my heart rate up, being thankful, giving my partner of 12 years, a hug and a kiss and tell her how much I love her, making sure the kids are out, like I'm a stepdad of 2 kids, and making sure that they're up and ready and ready to go to school and get them some food and so on and so forth. They're becoming more independent now because they're 1-16, 1-21, who still lives with us occasionally. But taking massive action in every area of your life. Every day, I get up with so much drive and enthusiasm, thankful for where I live. I live in the most magnificent area, the wine country in Malibu, California. It's so beautiful. To come from sleeping on the floor, David, for 2 years, having no bed, no pager, no phone, no car, no immigration papers, but a dream to live in my dream home and being surrounded by amazing friends and being thankful and being grateful for the gifts that our Creator has provided for us. Having this opportunity to spend time with you, working with Isagenix on this remarkable company with these remarkable products. And that was what my goal has always been, is to do good. And Zig Ziglar, we just talked about momentarily, he said you can get everything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want. And the things that I get being on the Home Shopping Network, connecting with Isagenix, I wrote those all down as goals to align myself with major corporations, to align myself with Home Shopping, to align myself with Isagenix, a major corporation that would distribute my products to the world. That was my big compelling why. That's why I'm so grateful. So my kick-ass life is to get up, exercise, move my body, be thankful, eat healthy, be passionate, be positive, despite the chaos and drama that's going on in the world, and show as much love and compassion to as many people as possible in the context of love and joy every day.
Yeah, and truly, again, as we start the show, we come full circle back to that, is that connection with people. It's like when I see, when we walk out of these rooms, we know there's 2,000 people here at this event we're at, and I watch each person as they walk past you. You know, you see them once, you remember them, you remember their story, you're deeply connected, which is a beautiful, beautiful trait.
What's called paying attention and listening.
Yeah, and that active listening that you have, is that something you always had, or is it something you've developed over the last few years, or were you always good at this?
Well, no, when I was on Talk 40 radio, I used to have a sign, speak like a Talk 40 mid-Atlantic radio disc jockey, good afternoon, and I used to speak like crazy fast, and I wasn't really paying attention because you don't get a chance to listen unless you had a caller call in. When I went to grad school, they teach you how to really listen, like you and I right now. You're a speaker, you're a professional speaker, you're on stage, you're magnificent. So we spend a lot of time speaking, but when we get off stage and we're being interviewed, you have to really, really pay attention to listen to what the other person is saying, because if you're not listening, you're not communicating, you're not understanding, and there's no real connection. That's why you teach the art of connection, the art of communication. So no, I wasn't always a good listener, but I get complimented now on being a good listener.
At first, you know, when Tony started talking about prayer, and of course we talked about it a lot, I was wondering, some of you who really don't pray, how that may be for you, whether it would sort of, you know, start to push you away from the show if you're not somebody who does sit in prayer. But hopefully, as you listened to the correlation between prayer and meditation and that quiet time, that sanctity, that place in your home where you can go and you can sort of recharge, and where you can have that conversation with your higher self or your creator or however you express your faith. So I really hope that you sort of get that wonderful combination that Tony talks about, which is that massive action and that deep relationship that he has with himself and people around him. And of course, that deep relationship he has with his creator, and that sort of time he takes for prayer and self-reflection and gratitude. And it's a really, really wonderful. And so if you have to sort of listen back, then listen back over the show again. And I want to remind you again, if you take a few moments right now and go and purchase the best of the kickasslife.com and listen to sort of some of the gems that I found over these last 80 shows. And I'll keep bringing them to you. But it will allow us to sort of keep the show on the air, and it will finance some of the things we want to do. And if you're interested again in joining us on the Kick-Ass Life Adventure Club and coming with us to Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands, then just sort of send me a text or an email, and or go on Facebook, the Kick-Ass Life, and let me know. And I would love to include you. And, you know, again, don't worry about what it costs or how much time it is just yet, because I was a great believer in a default mode. Most people sort of go to, I can't afford it, I don't have the time. And what I want you to do is to sort of say to yourself before you know these things is, hey, I'll find the time and I'll find a way to afford it, or how can I afford it? It's a better question. And so, you know, it's not gonna be a big profit center, but it will be a magnificent opportunity to expand your horizons to expand your experience in the world, to sort of start to understand a part of the world which even I haven't been to yet. So really excited to have you included in that, and thank you again, and I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.